following program is intended for mature audiences.
They used to bounce messages across the earth.
Shows. Everyone in the old world had a show.
Do you think there's still somebody out there? Sending shows?
Who knows? Those are the planes of silence.
Truth, the half-truth, and nothing of the truth. Veritas News, now with Sal Manella.
Good evening, this is Sal Manella with the Veritas News. As the overwhelming majority of Americans have commandeered the term Whopper to characterize most statements and claims by the president, Burger King sues Trump for copyright and trademark infringement. On a similar note, Kraft Foods is also suing Trump, claiming theft of their long-standing trademark phrase, Great American Cheese Again. Former Missouri Secretary of State and voter fraud expert Jason Kander completely debunks Trump's repeated voter fraud claims that over 3 million people voted illegally in the 2016 presidential election, saying, quote, "It would be easier to fake a Mars landing than it would be to do that," end quote. Kander's candor, with CNN's Jack Taper, accuses the president-elect Trump and the GOP of what 10 million more people than Trump voters know, and that is that the GOP needs voter suppression to win in 2018, and Trump needs out-and-out prohibition of Latino, Muslims, Black, LGBTQ, women, and educated white male mentally healthy voters in order to keep alive his chances of a so-called win in 2020. Meanwhile, spokespeople for Latinos, Muslims, Blacks, LGBTQ, women, and educated white male mentally healthy voters are joining in prayer that Trump's so-called win in 2020 will be impossible if the president-derelict himself were, hopefully, not alive at all, thereby killing his chances. But even such a scenario as that is now questionable, as Steve Bannon, citing voting by the dead as precedent for a 2020 win by voters for the dead. The Canadian TV show Marketplace, a consumer advocate news program, tested 6 popular fast food chicken sandwiches in the United States and Canada. None of the chicken samples they tested, even after multiple tests, had 100% chicken DNA. A&W's chicken grills averaged just 89.4 chicken DNA. Wendy's chicken sandwich, 88.5% chicken DNA. Tim Hortons chicken, 86.5% chicken DNA. McDonald's country chicken, 84.9% chicken DNA. Subway oven roasted chicken, 53.6% chicken DNA, and Subway sweet onion teriyaki, just 42.8% chicken DNA. While most of the fast food outlets' entrees were at least mostly chicken, Subway's 2 offerings averaged less than half chicken DNA and is now referred to by food and consumer activists as Subway's so-called chicken. President derelict Trump, upon hearing the term so-called chicken, assumed the 10 million more voters who voted for those other than him were attacking him sarcastically by alluding to his tweet where he referred to a federal member of the judiciary who ruled against his Muslim ban as a so-called judge. Mr. Trump said, quote, "Sad. These liberal snowflakes refuse to see I'm the bravest, most courageous president ever, period," end quote. Additionally, he said and tweeted, quote, "If anyone is chicken, it's President Obama, who couldn't even wipe out ISIS. Sad." Those close to former First Lady Michelle Obama say she's had enough of Trump's insane tweets and deceptive attacks on her husband. Mrs. Obama, an expert at nutrition and diet, called Subway's so-called chicken foul. Spokesman for Subway said they like to think of their 2 items in question as alternative foul. Mrs. Obama characterized Trump's Twitter attacks on her husband as unhinged. She said of Trump, quote, I wouldn't call Trump a so-called chicken. Trump's more like his KFC diet, chicken shit, end quote, quadrupling down, then raising by a million times 74 on his alternative fact accusation that President Obama illegally tapped his phones in Trump Tower. President derelict Trump is moving full speed ahead with his inquisition of the former president. Those close to Trump say he's wrestling with a tough decision, and that is deciding between appointing either Steve Bannon or Stephen Miller as the independent special persecutor. Members of the GOP group of positive thinkers and optimists almost expressed disappointment today at a luncheon when one member frowned at the banquet's waiter, saying his glass was half empty. Members of WISH, W-I-S-H, or Wishful Individuals Savoring Hope, planned the affair to celebrate President Derelict Trump's reversal of the national gender bathroom ban. Director of WISH, Pollyanna Reverie, continues to applaud Trump's one-day bathroom ban reversal, which allowed transgender people everywhere in the nation yesterday, except Alabama, to use ladies' rooms wherever they wanted. When reminded that the president lifted that ban only because yesterday was National A Day Without a Woman, Ms. Reverie said, quote, "Even so, it shows our president is flexible, compassionate, and humane," end quote. The president's one-day dispensation allowing transsexuals to use a ladies' room if she wanted was met with complaints by the transgender users about the bathroom's lack of cleanliness, especially in border location restrooms. Kellyanne Conway explained, saying, quote, "Trannies need to remember, not only was it a day without a woman, the border is now a place without an immigrant to clean those toilets," end quote. Noted transsexual Olympian Caitlyn Jenner continues to lash out at Trump on this issue. Jenner said, quote, "Trump is making America regress. What if Mr. Trump's Moscow female prostitutes weren't allowed to pee on his bed because he's a male? He wouldn't like that. At least in terms of urination, we should be more European. Personally, I like living abroad," end quote. Alabama refused to lift Trump's ban yesterday, explaining they've yet to have indoor plumbing. Some have reported, however, Alabama continued to allow closeted gay men considering public disclosure of their homosexuality to continue using outhouses. This has been Sal Manila with the Veritas News, and now here's Tom Savino with Savino Veritas.
Veritas, live from Burbank, California.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Savino Veritas this Thursday evening and every Thursday, and 24/7 on JuiceTalk.com. And they're at it again, friends. Or he and they are at it again. The blame game. The blame game. I hear somebody tapping. Who's that tapping at my door? Who's that tapping on my phone? No one! No one, you son of a bitch! No one's tapping at your door. Well, we're going to get to that in a minute. But the hate that Donald Trump has created in this country, in this world, is starting to reap its rewards, if you want to say that. Those sick mothers who follow Trump, they would see it as a reward. Innocent American citizens are being shot and killed because they wear a turban. No one could be more peaceful than a Sikh practitioner. We'll get into that in a moment. I'm very upset about this. But innocent people are being killed while the guilty people like Trump, the guilty people thrive and take our money and our health care. This is Tom Savino with Savino Veritas. I may be joking, but I'm never kidding.
Savino Veritas.
Total fabrication.
The gripes of Rat.
You know, I was a high school English teacher in Los Angeles for almost 30 years. I still am, actually, and it's over 30 years now, but I officially retired in 2014, and I'm now currently occasionally substituting. But nearly 30 years ago, before I taught straight English, I taught ESL, English as a Second Language, and all of my students were immigrants, all of them, mostly Latino students in the Los Angeles area. There were Mexicans, Salvadorians, Guatemalans, Costa Ricans even, mostly. But there were quite a number of students who were Sikh. Now, that word is S-I-H-K, and I've always pronounced it as Sikh. And no one has ever corrected me. And I think I'm maybe wrong because of a audio I'm about to play for you, which was a wonderful speech by a woman. It was a great sermon at a Baptist church, or it was either a Baptist or Methodist church in the South. And she is Sikh, but she did pronounce her religion as Sick. However, given the pronunciation of that word, I'm reluctant to use the correct pronunciation, if that is the correct pronunciation. If sick is the correct pronunciation, I'm reluctant to use it, because I refer to most of those sick in this society as Donald Trump supporters and Donald Trump himself, the head sick person, but not the head Sikh person, because he is antithetical to Sikh. Antithetical to Sikh.
Old habits die.
Now, I want to tell you a little story about teaching a Sikh student nearly 30 years ago in my ESL class. Her name was Paramgit Kaur. Paramgit Kaur, K-A-U-R, which is a common last name of the Sikhs. And Paramgit, I know now, means the highest song of bliss. At the time, I only heard that word once in referring to that student. Now, as a Sikh student, she wore the robes of her religion. The males in that religion wore turbans and had to as part of their devotion to their religion. Now, I haven't had guests on the show in a long time, but if you used to listen last year, you've heard me speak to some people about mystical experiences, and I've had many mystical experiences in my life. And I've had one with Paramgit. And many of my mystical experiences involve dreams. I dream every night. I remember most of my dreams. I used to write down my dreams. I have books and books of dreams written down, which I'm just a mental note to myself to reread those books. Some of them are quite enlightening and educational as to what I'm supposed to do in my life at this time. But Paramgit was a nice young lady. She had a tendency, as many students do, many high school students, junior high school students especially, or middle school students, but high school students too, maybe college students. And that is the difficulty for some to stay in his or her seat. Paramgit liked to get up and walk around. It was hard for her to stay seated all the time. Teaching an ESL class, an English class, in the Los Angeles Unified School District with 35 students, especially this particular class that I'm talking about, which was taking place in an old wood shop room. It used to be a wood shop, and they were having this English class there. It's not an environment conducive to learning a language, learning English and literature. And anyway, Paramgeet would often get up. And because of the environment where it was difficult and stressful and too many students in an environment where they shouldn't be, not related to what they're learning. If there was a wood shop, then if they were learning how to make chairs and tables, then of course it would have been fine, but not conducive really to English. But let me tell you, friends, these immigrant students, they were just happy to be anywhere. They were happy to be anywhere to learn anything, for the most part. Well, it was stressful, and I often got frustrated at things, and I'm trying to get control of the class, and students are walking around. I, of course, sometimes would react, being human, and getting angry and telling people to sit down and maybe even yelling. But this one day, on my desk was a brand new pen I bought for myself. It was not supplied by the Los Angeles Unified School District. I bought it at my own funds, and it was a pretty nice pen. And I had it on my desk, and I didn't have it on my desk. It disappeared. And Paramgeet was the only person walking around, and I blamed her for stealing my pen. She adamantly said she didn't, but I nevertheless blamed her, and I was already frustrated with the stressful situation, and I told her to sit down, and I reminded her that she was the only person walking around, so it must have been Paramgeet who stole my pen. Anyway, that was it for that period was over, and she left and went on to my next class, and the day was over. And that night I had a dream. I had a dream of an elderly man, East Indian man, not Native American, wearing a turban, a white turban, who also wore a long white beard. And in the dream, he said to me, among other things, which I don't remember, but one of the things he said to me was, Paramgeet did not steal the pen. And the dream stayed with me as 30 years later. I still remember the dream, still remember the situation. The next day, I saw Paramgeet, who was a little annoyed with me, and I spoke to her privately, and I said, you know, I had a dream last night of a man with a white beard and a white turban, and he said, you didn't steal the pen. She said, I didn't. She said, but tell me more about this man in your dream. I said, well, he was elderly, and he had a white turban, and he had a long white beard. Well, Paramgeet then went to her supplies or folder or purse or whatever. I think it was a purse, I think. And she opened it and pulled out a picture of this man who I saw in the dream. I said, that's the man I saw in my dream. Who is this man? And she was awestruck and quite flabbergasted and didn't know what to make of the situation. I was a bit myself. I said, who is that? And she said, that is the head of my religion. That is the Muhammad or Christ-like figure in my religion. That is Guru Nanak. And I said, oh my goodness, I had a dream about Guru Nanak. And he said, you didn't steal the pen. Anyway, Paramgeet and I developed quite a relationship.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
6 months later, she invited my wife and I to her wedding at the Gurdwala, which is, that's a word that means temple for the Sikhs. And it was quite a wonderful ceremony, and I got to know a lot of Sikhs, and I got to know a lot about the Sikh religion. The Sikh religion is a peacemaking religion. It's a religion that exists to make peace between Muslims and Hindus. That's kind of the basis of Sikhs. Every Sikh I've ever known is a peaceful person and a spiritual person. And they have often been persecuted because they are associated with Muslims. And how wrong it is to just stereotype Muslims, but then to misidentify other people as Islamic is just horrible, especially if you're going to kill them, as Trump supporters do. That's what happened in the state of Washington the other day, and an innocent Sikh man was shot because a Trump supporter told him to go back to his country when, sure enough, he was in his country, right here, the United States of America.
Well, I want to know about this.
Maybe because of that shooting, the Washington Post this week reissued a video of a wonderful sermon given by a Sikh woman in a Baptist or Methodist church, I don't remember, in the South. And here it is now.
वाहेगुरु जी का खालसा वाहेगुरु जी की फतेह. On Christmas Eve, 103 years ago, my grandfather waited in a dark and dank cell. He sailed by steamship across the Pacific Ocean from India to America, leaving behind colonial rule. But when he landed on American shores, immigration officials saw his dark skin, his tall turban worn as part of his Sikh faith, and saw him not as a brother, but as foreign, as suspect, threw him behind bars where he languished for months. Until a single man, a white man, a lawyer named Henry Marshall, filed a writ of habeas corpus that released him Christmas Eve, 1913. My grandfather, Kehar Singh, became a farmer, free to practice the heart of his Sikh faith, love, and oneness. And so when his Japanese-American neighbors were rounded up and taken to their own detention camps in the deserts of America, he went out to see them when no one else would. He looked after their farms until they returned home. He refused to stand down. In the aftermath of September 11th, when hate violence exploded in these United States and a man that I called uncle was murdered, I tried to stand up. I became a lawyer like the man who freed my grandfather, and I joined a generation of activists fighting detentions and deportations, surveillance and special registration, hate crimes and racial profiling. And after 15 years, with every film, with every lawsuit, with every campaign, I thought we were making the nation safer for the next generation. And then my son was born. On Christmas Eve, I watched him ceremoniously put the milk and cookies by the fire for Santa Claus. And after he went to sleep, I then drank the milk and ate the cookies. I wanted him to wake up and see them gone in the morning. I wanted him to believe in a world that was magical. But I am leaving my son a world that is more dangerous than the one that I was given. Because we are raising a brown boy in America. A brown boy who may someday wear a turban as part of his faith. And in America today, as we enter an era of enormous rage, as white nationalists hail this moment as their great awakening, As hate acts against Sikhs and our Muslim brothers and sisters are at an all-time high, I know that there will be moments, whether on the streets or in the schoolyard, where my son will be seen as foreign, as suspect, as a terrorist. Just as black bodies are still seen as criminal. Brown bodies are still seen as illegal. Trans bodies are still seen as immoral. Indigenous bodies are still seen as savage. The bodies of women and girls seen as someone else's property. And when we see these bodies, not as brothers and sisters, then it becomes easier to bully them, to rape them, to allow policies that neglect them, that incarcerate them, that kill them. Yes, Rabbi.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The future is dark. On this New Year's Eve, this watch night, I close my eyes and I see the darkness of my grandfather's cell. And I can feel the spirit of ever-rising optimism in the Sikh tradition, Chardikala, within him. And so the mother in me asks, What if this darkness is not the darkness of the tomb, but the darkness of the womb? What if our America... What if our America is not dead, but a country that is waiting to be born? What if the story of America is one long labor? What if all of our grandfathers and grandmothers are standing behind us now, those who survived occupation and genocide, slavery and Jim Crow, detentions and political assault? What if they're whispering in our ear today, tonight, you are brave? What if this is our nation's great transition? What does the midwife tell us to do? Breathe. And then? Because if we don't push, we will die. If we don't push, our nation will die. Tonight, we will breathe. Tomorrow, we will labor in love, through love. And your revolutionary love is the magic we will show our children. Vaiguru Ji Ka Khalsa. Vaiguru Ji Ki Fateh.
That was Valerie Kaur. Valerie Kaur on New Year's Eve 2016 at the church in the South. Powerful speech.
The short, sharp shock of a Trump presidency has sparked a new American fitness craze, walking slowly while lifting a one-pound weight. Most of us have no experience with creative, sustained protest, so we sent Amy Hoggart to get a few tips from some folks who have been resisting oppressors ever since the Roman Empire.
Last summer, my country voted to fuck itself.
The UK has voted out from the European Union.
Oh, shit. Luckily, I'm a dual citizen, so I got on a plane and moved to America, land of the free and home of the...
Donald Trump wins the presidency.
Shit. But we can't give up yet, because there is one place where this asshole did meet his storybook ending, and that place is Scotland. Once upon a 10 years ago, a beast from the West came to Scotland and wandered into the untouched dunes of Aberdeenshire, declaring it for himself.
We're building the greatest golf course anywhere in the world.
Before he could grab them by the peat bog, the Benadonald professed his love to Scotland.
My mother was born in Stornoway. I love the people, I love the Scotch. I'm Scotch myself.
It's Scottish, you plonker. And with the false promise of 6,000 jobs, the Scottish government was seduced, and his course grew and grew.
I'm an artist.
And this is probably the greatest piece of canvas that anybody's ever worked on.
Ugh, why are they always failed artists? But there was legend of a man who lived next to the golf course and refused to sell his land. A farmer who invented the art of pissing off Trump and rocking a woolly jumper. Michael Forbes.
I met him once.
Yeah?
Just been on the beach here, come over the dunes. About half a dozen bodyguards. And the first thing he says was, what's this what land worth, $25 an acre? This is in your fucking dreams, I said.
So nothing could make you sell your land?
No. I sussed him out in 10 seconds. He was an arsehole. The only regret I have is I didn't knock him on his arse when I met him.
This drove the Banshee so mad that he lumbered in front of some TV cameras to start wailing.
I look at Mr. Forbes and his disgusting conditions. Mr. Forbes lives in a pig-like atmosphere.
It's a slum. I mean, it's horrible the way he maintains it.
Did you feel really hurt when he called you a pig?
I was actually laughing about it. So was my mother. She thinks he's a clown. I love pissing him off. He's a compulsive liar. That's what he is. You just keep calling him a liar. Yeah, and it's bound to hurt someday.
During the election, I was calling him a liar because I was part of this secret Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it made a massive impact. But rather than preaching to the choir, Michael painted it on the side of his shed. This enraged the beast even more, and he sent the government to seize Forbes' land. But the farmer's fight had inspired the villagers, like our next hero.
Here's Trump threatening to seize Michael Forbes' land, so I offered to purchase a small part of it.
Why would you purchasing it stop him from seizing it?
At that time, I was a researcher in Antarctica, and so if they wanted to purchase it from me, they'd have to come and see me about it, 9,000 miles away.
Bested by a seal spooner, Black Donald gave up and moved on to his next fight. When Scotland announced plans to build turbines off the coast of his golf course, Trump charged into Parliament to tilt at the windmills.
They are so unattractive, so ugly, so noisy, and so dangerous that if Scotland does this, I think Scotland will be in serious trouble.
Where is the clinical evidence? Not an opinion.
Well, first of all, I am the evidence.
Riding off that laughter, our next hero, Parliament member Patrick Harvey, took his stand.
I tweeted a picture from the end of life of Brian poking fun at him, and I just added these little speech bubbles saying, I'm the evidence. I'm the evidence.
Wow, nailed it. How many retweets and favourites did it get?
I think it's had quite a number since then.
That number is 52. Yet somehow that was still enough to anger the brute.
I was astonished to receive a letter telling me Donald Trump was accusing me of blasphemy and complaining to the Parliamentary Standards Commissioner.
Blasphemy? Is that because he's legally God?
Well, Donald Trump accused me essentially of offending the whole of Christendom.
The trolling only continued because when Trump lurched out of Parliament, he bumped into this brave knight.
I found myself outside the Scottish Parliament behind him at one point, and I had a balloon in my hand and took a shot. I ballooned Donald Trump. I rubbed the balloon on his head and his hair stood up.
It is amazing that it reacts so chemically similar to real hair.
Isn't it amazing? I don't have many tips for the people of America, but if they find themselves behind Donald Trump with a statically charged balloon, take your chance.
From there, the whole country joined in the fun. They showed up to protest, brought some very subtle signs, and his neighbours started flying Mexican flags. This one lady was even arrested for urinating on the course. But in retrospect, he was probably into that. Yet somehow Trump still thinks he's Scotland's golden boy.
I have a great relationship with the people of Scotland. Most neighbours love us.
I hit the pubs to hear what Trump's Scottish neighbours really think.
I think Donald Trump's the biggest ball bag in the world.
He's an idiot.
He's a spoiled baby.
A walloper.
My toothpaste cunt.
My ball bag.
What's it mean?
You're the skin that holds in the testicles.
Just the sack.
That's it, you're just the sack.
You're a fanny. Just by tits.
Just a bit of a wank. Slimy, greasy.
He's a fucking prick.
He's an asshole.
Donald Trump is a cunt.
That's right. That's very right. As fun as it is to shit on Trump, I was still so lost, and also very drunk. Sure, the windmills are being built, his course is losing money, and Michael Forbes still has his land. But back home, President Trump is just teeing off.
What advice would you give to Americans?
Just keep pissing him off.
Just keep him busy by annoying him.
Yeah.
And then he can't do all the stuff we're worried about.
Mm-hmm. An arsehole is always an arsehole. Keep pissing him off, and he'll crack up.
Yeah.
And he'll end up in a padded cell.
Michael is right. We can't give up. We have to choose life. Choose pissing him off, because apparently anyone can do it. A cranky old farmer? A man who barely has a Twitter? Ginger Jesus? Or even some dork with binoculars?
Hey, fuck off!
Choose being a dick. Choose getting 300 Scots to call him a dick.
Oi!
And if all else fails, choose showing your dick. Because he's just some tosser who can't even keep me off his actual golf course. He may have taken our country,
but they'll never take our freedom!
Our freedom! Fuck off! That movie's like 20 years old, man. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, have some respect.
Wow, Scotland is mean.
It's the Fabulous Geek Show.
All tied up, ready for
Veritas is satire spelled backwards.
JuicedTalk.com.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards. With a V for victory.
The Vino Veritas in Wine the Truth. This is Artist D.
And Anne-Marie from Up All Night on 4 Culture Radio.
Have you got any wine, Anne-Marie?
I'm completely intoxicated.
We love to wine. We drink wine. We listen to Savino Veritas every week at JuiceTalk.com. Don't we love Tom?
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
How you doing?
That President Trump is trying to.
We are not going to let the fake news tell us what to do, how to live, or what to believe. We are free and independent people, and we will make our own choices.
That was Donald Trump last night in Florida. And this morning, we are thankful to be joined by the anchor of Fox News Sunday, Chris Wallace. Chris, good morning.
Hey, Chris.
Good morning, Chris.
Hey, guys. So I'm sure you saw the speech. I know you did. Last night, the president continued his blistering attacks against the mainstream media. But he made some historical references. And I want to play this and get you to react to it. Take a listen.
Thomas Jefferson, Andrew Jackson, and Abraham Lincoln, and many of our greatest presidents fought with the media and called them out, oftentimes on their lives.
Chris, we did some research. Thomas Jefferson called the press the only toxin of a nation. Lincoln said newspapers lie and then they re-lie. Are we putting too much into the fact that he's going after the press that's clearly going after him?
Well, yeah, I didn't know you were going to say this, but in fact, I have a historical reference here from Thomas Jefferson, who back in 1787, said this, and I think we need to keep this in context. He said, were it left to me to decide whether we should have a government without newspapers or newspapers without a government, I should not hesitate a moment to prefer the latter. Yes, presidents have always had, and politicians have always had problems with the press. They want good press. The press doesn't always give it to them. But what Jefferson there is, despite all of our disputes, that to the functioning of a free and fair democracy, you must have an independent press. And that is why so many people were really upset when Donald Trump said, look, we're big boys. We criticize presidents. They want to criticize us back. That's fine.
Yeah.
But when he said that the fake news media is not my enemy, it's the enemy of the American people, I believe that crosses an important line.
One of those people that are up in arms about this is Senator John McCain, who's overseas at the moment. And he says that the president's attacks are a sign of a dictatorship. Here's what he said.
If you want to preserve democracy as we know it, you have to have a free and many times adversarial press. And without it, I'm afraid that we would lose so much of our individual liberties over time. That's how dictators get started. The first thing that dictators do is shut down the press. And I'm not saying that President Trump is trying to be a dictator. I'm just saying we need to learn the lessons of history.
Chris, what do you make of those remarks and also the battle that is brewing between President Trump and John McCain? Because, as you know, these two need each other.
Well, I would say that in terms of of what John McCain said there, particularly with the clarification. He's not saying that Trump is starting to become a dictator, but that trying to shut down an independent and fair media or free media, not necessarily even fair. Part of the, what the founders said is it can be unfair, but the idea is that in the wash of all of the media coming out with all of their reports, it's a check on power, and that it, and he was saying that that in state, in dictatorships, there's state-run media, and there's no opportunity for a free, independent press. So I think he's exactly right there. As far as Trump and McCain, it's absolutely going to be a continuing soap opera saga in this administration. Sharp differences between the two, especially when it comes to foreign policy, especially when it comes to Russia.
Reince Priebus on your show this morning has said overnight even some critical things about the press and that relationship. What are you going to be talking with him about today?
I'm going to be talking to him about the press and that relationship. I think this is an important time, frankly, for the media to strike back. Look, we are not included in the list of people that the list of deplorables, if you will, that Donald Trump said. But we were singled out by Barack Obama. And I don't think it matters whether it's the president is singling out the organization that you represent or the other organizations. It's wrong. I mean, we can take criticism, but to say that we're the enemy of the American people, I think, it's crosses an important line. In addition, we're also going to have Rush Limbaugh. Can't wait to get him involved in this conversation.
Well, he'll certainly have comments on that. You talk about the free and independent press, which is totally correct. But what I think what President Trump would say is, I'm taking on the hidden bias. I'm taking on a press that tells you they're unbiased, but actually the New York Times has a massive bias, and then we're supposed to pretend like that's the mainstream media. That's the paper of record. You know, when our founders were there, there were partisan press. Papers were Republican or Democrat or Federalist, and it was open about it. He's saying they tell you they're unbiased, but I know they're biased because I see the fake news. Is there something there? It's not about the independent press. It's about the bias of the press.
I think there's absolutely something there, Pete. And if he had said that, you wouldn't have heard a peep out of me. I mean, Lord knows Barack Obama criticized Fox News. Donald Trump wants to criticize the New York Times. Right. That's fine. But it's different from saying that we are an enemy of the American people. That's a different thing.
Yeah.
And people need, and I know that there are a lot of listeners out there who are going to reflexively take Donald Trump's side on this. It's a different thing when a president, because if it's a president you like who talks about trying to, the press being the enemy of the people, then it's going to be a president you don't like saying the same thing. And dangerous.
We look forward to your show, Chris. It's going to be a good one.
Thanks, Chris.
A lot to talk about. Good to see you.
Thanks, Chris.
Let me just remove the mystery here and explain to you and your viewers why it is false to say that President Obama ordered a wiretap of Trump Tower. This may come as some surprise to the current occupant of the Oval Office, but the President of the United States does not have the authority to unilaterally order the wiretapping of an American citizen. If the FBI decided to use their wiretapping authority in the context of a counterintelligence or criminal investigation, it would require FBI investigators, officials of the Department of Justice, going to a federal judge and making a case and demonstrating probable cause to use that authority to conduct the investigation. That is a fact.
Is there anything that especially sort of you're afraid of that scares you with this president?
Well, there are a great many.
His behavior is erratic. It's discordant. It's incoherent.
Number one is ignorance. I'm afraid of his getting us into a war or something.
He's composed tweets about World War III. He attributes it to other people, but to me that's terrifying that you have a president who is making light of the idea of World War III.
Particularly in the foreign policy arena, where he's done things that really scare me.
He has less respect for the Constitution, less respect for the separation of powers, less respect for the diversity and beauty of America in its diversity. That I worry about what he could do.
He has no concept, as far as I can tell, of democratic norms.
He made the astounding statement that the press is the enemy of the people. That is not something we've ever heard an American president say. I don't think even Richard Nixon went that far.
If you want to form an authoritarian country, the first thing you do is bash the press and try to destroy the legitimacy of the judiciary.
He's essentially assailing the First Amendment. That strikes at the heart of our democracy.
Nationalism is about creating a hierarchical society and then sinking everybody's individuality into militarism and then going to war against other people and stereotyping and vilifying foreigners. And you can see precisely where Steve Bannon wants to go.
Here we go with Russia again.
We have to see what all is involved with Russia right now and Flynn and all of the unbelievable revelations that are coming out even without the investigation.
Where this comes from is very concerning. Very concerning.
I want to see him behave and speak as someone who has a grasp on the office that he now holds, because so far he hasn't shown that to me.
We obtained an outline of a documentary proposal that Stephen Bannon worked on 10 years ago that would have been a treatment about the rise of Islamic fascism in the United States. The iconic image of the U.S. Capitol on a pristine spring day, the dome glistening under an azure sky and a brilliant sun. As the camera pulls in, we notice something strange, something not right. Old Glory fluttering from its flagpole on the Capitol's portico looks different, but we can't put our finger on it. As we pull in, we see why. Instead of the stars and stripes, the crescent and star. What's interesting about this outline is it goes beyond a discussion about radical Muslims and talks about an anxiety that Islamic community groups were really serving as front groups that were allowing these elements to have cover in society, and as well a sense that a broad range of institutions in society, from the media to universities to the government, were essentially providing an outlet for some of these elements to come into society by appeasing them. Bannon himself has talked about how this could be a very violent struggle and has cited really historic battles going back to the Crusades between Christianity and Islam when talking about the conflict that faces the West when it comes to radical Muslims. Bannon is by the president's side at almost all times. We've seen in photos from the Oval Office when President Trump is calling world leaders, almost always Stephen Bannon is in the room with him. We know that he is having a very heavy hand and a lot of involvement in drafting the slew of executive orders that have come out of the White House.
Secondly, I'm establishing new vetting measures to keep radical Islamic terrorists out of the United States of America. We don't want them here.
We know that Bannon had a strong hand in helping draft one of the early executive orders that President Trump signed, which did temporarily ban travel from 7 Muslim-majority countries. And there's no question that he is almost without peer in terms of his influence inside the White House. There's perhaps no one else who has as much influence and access to the president other than President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner.
Hi, everyone. Tom Savino here. Yesterday was International Women's Day, and it was a day without a woman in the United States. A strike, a woman's strike. And because it was a day without a woman yesterday, Donald Trump so kindly reversed the gender-specific restroom ban, and transsexuals and anyone could use the ladies' room because there was a day without a woman. So the ladies' rooms are free. But as Sal Manila mentioned in his broadcast, the toilets were very dirty because it's also bathrooms without immigrants, and it couldn't be cleaned. But it's so good to have the women back again today. So let's listen, in keeping with our yoga theme of our India theme of the Sikh religions and India. Maybe we'll even hear from Swami Salami tonight. But let's hear from the women from yesterday and see what they were talking about yesterday. Kumbhakasana, Paribrita Dhanu Shirshasana, Padang Ardha Chandrasana, Madhya Rita Sandhya 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 Chandrasana, Mad
or Kumbhakasana,
Jatara,
Parivritta,
Bhujangasana,
Parivritta,
Bhujangasana,
Naraja,
Sinavasana,
Badavakasana,
Balasana,
Bhujangasana,
Rajarita,
Janu,
Shirshasana,
Shirshasana,
Arda,
Sukha,
Tushasana,
Chaturanga,
Dandasana,
Janu,
Shirshasana,
Chandrasana,
Shirshasana,
Janu, Shirshasana,
Chakrasana,
Mukhasana,
Balanga,
Dandasana,
Hutita,
Sukhasana,
Chandrasana,
Chaturanga, Dandasana,
Pancha Mayurasana,
Sukhasana,
Hutita,
Sukhasana,
Adho,
Adho,
Garudasana,
Rikshasana,
Parshvakonasana,
Hutita,
Bhujangasana,
Shavasana,
Bhujangasana,
Paripurna,
Navasana,
Bada,
Ustarasana,
Utkatasana,
Rasana,
Balasana,
Bhujangasana,
Makarasana,
Adho,
Mukhato,
Rikshato,
Garudasana,
Sukhasana,
Chaturanga,
Sintasana,
Bhujangasana,
Shishasana,
Bhujangasana,
Navasana,
Utkatasana,
Rasana,
Balasana,
Jangasana,
Jangasana,
Adho,
Adho,
Sukhasana,
Agiswarasana,
Sukhasana,
Agiswarasana,
Sukhasana,
Agiswarasana,
Sukhasana,
Agiswarasana,
Sukhasana,
Agiswarasana,
Sukhasana,
Agiswarasana,
Sukhasana,
Sharanga,
Sukhasana,
Adho Mukha Rikshasana,
Shavasana,
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 Shavasana.
Lingams and Yarnies, it's Swami Salami.
Satnam, Namaste, Swami Salami. Numbing yourself prevents you from confronting your issues and keeps you from ever finding resolution or peace, but allows those with no dental coverage the painless option of self-tooth extraction. I once pulled my own eye tooth and I couldn't see what I was saying. We are born equipped to experience the complex array of diverse emotions and physical contortions in yoga class. Many of us, however, are uncomfortable confronting our most powerful emotions in bhava upashita konasana. We may shy away from delight and despair and deny life's colors by retreating into a world of monotone gray, or numb our pain with pain as in 50 Shades.
We may numb ourselves to what we are truly feeling. It's easier to suppress our emotions than to deal with them. So we may momentarily turn to pleasures such as alcohol, food, sugar, shopping, too much television, and dirty anal sex. We may even numb our hearts. While it is normal to temporarily seek distraction as a means of coping with intense emotions, numbing ourselves prevents you from confronting your issues, keeps you from ever finding resolution or peace, and costs a small fortune in Novocaine. When you are numb, there is no pain or powerlessness, but there can also be no joy, unless you get a kick out of reciting Mary Had a Little Lamb, or trying to drink the smoothie with no straw while your lips and your gums are desensitized. The activities that numb you may seem harmless or pleasurable, but using them to numb ourselves diminishes the quality of your life and often prevents you from lifting small objects. Numbing yourself so that you don't have to feel intense emotions can often satisfy a surface need while blocking your awareness of a deeper need to dance the running man proficiently on the club dance floor without making a fool of yourself and falling. You may find solace in food or shopping when what you really need is spiritual nourishment or a 5-hour energy drink. The less you feel, the less alive you feel. Your feelings add vividness to your experiences and serve to connect you to the world around you and enable you to pick the right greeting card for that lost lover on Valentine's Day. It is possible to disavow yourselves of numbing behaviors a little at a time and once again taste less rich flavors. When you sense that you are engaging in a particular behavior simply to deaden your emotions, stop. And ask yourself why and take out the sex toys starting with the smaller ones. Examining the feelings that drive you to numb yourself can help you understand what is triggering your desires to emotionally fade out. With each numbing activity that you cut out of your life, you find yourself being more aware and experiencing greater emotional acuity. Start with one-eye anger class in yoga, then buy a 3-month series of Bikram yoga, then to really feel all your life, allow yourself to be sexually harassed by Tantra yourself. This has been Swami Salami. Satnam, Namaste.
Thank you for listening, everybody. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Be with us again next Thursday evening at 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time at 148.ca/1 and 24/7 at the Too Cool for School website, juicedtalk.com. Please follow me on Twitter at TJ Savino, Twitter, TJ Savino, Twitter, and write to me, too, at tjsavino22@gmail.com. This is Tom Savino saying, I may be joking, but I'm never kidding. Resist!
Meeting is adjourned. Oh, I am sorry, sir. I didn't mean to overstep my bounds. You say that.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
No, you say that, Governor.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
The end.
By George, he's got it. It is the end.
No, that'll be all. Just be sure to lock the door behind you on your way out. Good night.